Live from the WGBB studios in Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From the crossroads of Merrick Avenue and Sunrise Highway in beautiful Merrick, Long Island, New York, this is Long Island's WGBB Sports Talk New York, 95.9 FM, 1240 AM on your dial. I'm your host, Mike Wadone, joined as always by the man we call Cap, Chris Caputo. 516-623-1240. 516-623-1240 is the number if you'd like to join us. We've got a jam-packed show tonight. We're going to be talking Giants football, hopefully a little U.S. Open tennis. And then to round out our hour, we have Coach Mark Gottfried, who was a big-time coach Division I in college basketball throughout the years. Now he has his own kind of inspirational website and business going on. We're going to talk a little bit of the state of athletics with him. But before we do any of that, we're going to throw it over to my man, Cappy, Chris Caputo. How you doing tonight, Cap?
Great, Coach. Back in the studio. Glad to be here. Talk some sports. I think it'll be fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a great time of year because, obviously, we got Jets, Giants, baseball. We can touch on that. I'm sure we'll hit a little bit of that before we go out. U.S. Open is a big story, you know, started off today. Hopefully, we'll hit on that. But before we do any of that, we're going to go to our Giants expert, our roving reporter, A.J. Rovner. Welcome, A.J. How you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for the opportunity to come on again, gents.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with you as someone who works very closely with the Giants, you know, in the ins and outs, you know, it really makes a lot of sense for us to have you in right now and kind of ask you your opinion on some things. I know Cap wants to kind of pick your brain on the quarterback situation, you know, depth charts and all that stuff. So welcome aboard. And let's just ask you this to start off. What's your feeling now going into the season? You know, you got about 2 weeks before the regular season, but we've got three, you know, pretty good preseason games under our belt. How are you feeling going into the season as a Giant fan?
I mean, I think there's no secret that there's optimism. You know, last year, even at this time with the preseason, the Giants really struggled offensively. And to put up 30 points in three consecutive preseason games, I don't think there's anything to make a mistake about. That's impressive, you know. And the last two games were, you know, blowouts. You know, this was the first time the Giants beat a team by 32 points since 2010 in any type of game. I looked that up when I was working the preseason game on Thursday night. It was the first time since 2010 the Giants had beat a team in a pre, post, or regular season game by that margin. So there's a lot to be excited about. But at the same time, you know, you got to be honest and try and just look at things through a lens and just say the schedule is really tough. I don't think there's any secret. Everyone knows that. You're going to be playing the NFC Championship game twice, both teams that were featured in it, the Commanders and Eagles. You got to play the other team that was in the Super Bowl as your home opener on Sunday Night Football. And then numerous other playoff teams, too. The Chargers, the Broncos, the Packers, the Lions, the Vikings. So there's a lot to be optimistic about, but I think you also have to realize, hey, you know, one game at a time, this is a really tough schedule.
AJ, I think you're right. I think it's unfortunately you can't just look at the positives of preseason. You have to look at a team schedule, and obviously you know who's in the division with the Giants, and hopefully you catch teams maybe in the beginning when they're a little bit off. But at the same time, you also have to look at what was put on the field. And, you know, this could have been a situation where they changed leadership in the head coaching position, and they did not, as well as the general manager. And they kind of stood put. Made some additions to the team in different areas, including quarterback situation. And now they're moving forward. But I would say, like, this is a do-or-die year for the leadership, both the general manager and the head coach. Do you think that results are going to be the bottom line for those two?
No doubt. And this all stems back to the beginning when they first started. They had Daniel Jones their first year. They made the postseason, then made a commitment to him. It didn't pan out that first year, and then ultimately, we all know what happened last year, the release, he goes to the Vikings, now he's starting for the Colts, good for DJ, I'm always going to root for him. And But now this is really their last chance. This is their team now. A lot of that team from 2022 and they made a push was Dave Gettleman's team. That was his. You know, so many of those pieces were not there. Barkley and, you know, Jones and Lawrence and so many other guys were just all, you know, Xavier McKinney's another guy, an all pro in the Packers now. This is really their team. You know, they draft a stud in Abdul Carter. They have their whole secondary figured out. They got Paulson Adebo and Javon Holland. But you just look around this roster, there's not many, if any, Gettleman pieces left. Besides, you know, there's a few guys, Dexter Lawrence and a few others, but this is really their chance, it feels like, to make a strike. And it's do or die. And just to follow up on that preseason point that you made there, Chris, at the beginning, the Giants only scored 30 points in the whole preseason last year, and they scored 30-plus in all three this year. So it's definitely, I'm sensing optimism on the offensive standpoint. Now you just got to do it when the games count.
Okay, so a follow-up on that. If you were to look at the Giants right now, strengths versus weaknesses, what do you think their strengths are and biggest weaknesses?
Well, the strength is definitely the defensive line. Okay. I don't think that's a secret to anybody. You got Brian Burns, who's an all-pro. Dexter Lawrence, I could put my foot down and say, well, first off, he's genuinely one of the nicest people. And second off, I think he's the best interior defensive lineman this sport has right now. So, you know, before he went down last year, he was leading the NFL in sacks. You know, that's almost impossible as an interior lineman. You got Kayvon Thibodeau, who's shown a lot of flash. And, of course, you had Abdul Carter, who just can play everywhere on the football field. So you have that, and you also have depth. You have Raheem Nunez-Rochus. You have Roy Robertson-Harris. And there's other guys, too, that can really fill out that defensive line. Now, if you want to go to the weakness standpoint of it, I would flip it and go to the offensive line. You know, John Michael Smith has had a lot of issues at center going into his third year now out of Minnesota. He's got to deal with a different quarterback. He's really been with Jones and, you know, Drew Locke, Tommy DeVito. Those are all guys that don't have as much experience as Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston. So it'll be interesting to see how a veteran does with such a rookie center. We know Evan Neal shifted from tackle to guard this year. And the most important part, you have an all-pro in Andrew Thomas, but how healthy can he stay?
Yeah.
So the offensive line is really what I would say is a concern, but the Giants might have the best defensive line in football.
So one of the major, you know, storylines obviously has been the quarterback situation. You got four guys there who have, well, a first-round rookie, and then three guys who have started games in the NFL, one, you know, arguably in Russell Wilson going to be a Hall of Famer. They've all got, you know, results. Tommy DeVito last year stepped up, you know, the best he could at that time, but highly unlikely to keep four quarterbacks. What do you see kind of developing with that as we go into cut-down day? Do you see, I know obviously there's a couple of teams that need a starting quarterback. Do you see Jameis maybe going or some kind of interesting thing with you know, the practice squad? What do you think is going to happen?
I think the Giants have been pretty adamant about what I've seen through media, that they want to keep Jameis. They like him as a locker room presence. And they signed him to a 2-year guaranteed deal, which really makes me think, okay, if Russ goes down and Dart's not ready, Jameis can be our guy. So I definitely think those three are here to stay. When I talk Wilson, who's the clear starter, you got Dart, who we don't know is going to be the 2 or 3, and Jameis going to stay. Now, DeVito's the really interesting part. He might have been the best quarterback in preseason football by many metrics. He went 30 for 38 for 323 yards and 4 touchdowns. And the guy barely played a full game of football. I mean, maybe a little bit less. Like, he was just like that. Yes, he's playing against the 3s and 4s and guys that may never play in the NFL. But still, you're also playing with 3s and 4s when he's played with Saquon Barkley and other guys. So that's really impressive. You know, today the Raiders had an injury. Pete Carroll said he's looking for a quarterback. And there's other teams out there. If I was the Giants, I would do what Cleveland's doing and keep four quarterbacks on the roster and then see if you could maybe get some value down the road. Hey, Russ is playing really well. Maybe we could trade one of these guys at least like a 6th or 7th round supplemental pick so you can get some value as opposed to cutting DeVito, because then you know he's going to go somewhere else. He's not just going to hop back on the practice squad like he did the last 2 years. So I think your best plan of action is to keep all four and hopefully get some value for the veto.
I mean, that sounds interesting. I just know that, you know, there was just a lot of hype, and especially with the way that Jackson Dart played, that I think fans, if things don't go well in week one, week two, are going to be asking for Jackson Dart and not asking for Jameis Winston. And I think that's where the problem is going to happen, is you play two teams in your division, then all of a sudden week three against the Chiefs, you know, let's say you have a tough Sunday night, you're now, let's say, 1-2, 0-3, and people are asking for Jackson Dart, but he's not even considered the number two. And I think that's where it's going to get ugly, as far as if the Giants don't have success early, there may be a calling for a young kid who either the Giants don't think is ready or they're just not committed to yet.
Right, and I think there has to be a in-between of, okay, it's important to get Jackson reps, and or, you know, do we really go for this thing? If you go back to Eli Manning's rookie year,
yeah,
Kurt Warner was a Giants starter.
Right.
And the Giants were actually in playoff contention.
And they made a move.
They still top and elected to go to Eli, and they stunk, but it winded up paying off. So, you know, now you have to really be able to play that card and just, you know, obviously your hope is Russ is the starter all year.
Right.
And the Giants have success. But, you know, if you're, I don't know if 1-2 would do the trick, but if you're 1-5, 1-6, the Giants have a really late bye week this year. You know, if you're sitting in that okay like last year, we're not going to make the postseason, then you just have to have that conversation. You know, Russ is on a 1-year deal. The odds he's back are very low. Let's, you know, see what he can bring to the table as in, you know, starts. So I think that would probably be the right play. I think Winston's there in case Russ gets hurt. I think Dart's going to play if the Giants are out of contention. You know, I think they both serve a purpose for replacing Russ in different ways.
Yeah, and as you said, hopefully Russ takes them on a nice run, and you know, there's no option but to keep him in there as long as you can. Talk a little bit about the vibe. I know you're at the stadium a lot. You're also there. Talk about the vibe from day one of training camp all the way through to the last preseason game. Because I saw on that interception touchdown, I believe it was the third or fourth quarter, where all 80-something guys are out there after the pick six, you know, rooting on their guys. And it just seemed like this is a team that actually wants to rally around each other.
Yeah, it's nice to see knowing how the Giants have, you know, honestly just performed since 2011 when they won their last Super Bowl. You know, only two playoff appearances. You want to have that camaraderie. Maybe that's the big reason why Dable and Shane came back, you know, not to just have such a huge fixture change. I mean, because you know there is that light where, hey, you know, he did take over a team and bring him to the postseason. And it is nice to see guys getting excited, especially those that are competing for a roster spot, whether it's here in New York or for somewhere else. I think that's where a lot of people get mistaken. You know, this is Tommy DeVito trying to make the Giants roster, but also trying to make the other 31 rosters, you know. So, but also, to pick up your point, training camp, listen, I'm very lucky and blessed to be able to be there day in and day out and be so close to, you know, world-class athletes. And it just seems like there was a different level of excitement. And, you know, there was 12 practices open to the public this year, 11. And it was really cool to wrap up the final day of the Giants-Jets joint practice, and you could really feel the electricity of, like, a game setting. And, you know, I say this for all of those that don't get the opportunity to go to MetLife Stadium. Like, it's just so loud for those joint practices. Hey, maybe people can't afford to get to the stadium to see Jets-Giants. You know, and training camp is free to the public, and it was just so loud, and there's so much enthusiasm. And the Giants had already played a preseason game at that point. They beat Buffalo in a fun game late. So it definitely seems like there's a different level of excitement. There's a different quarterback for the first time in a while going into camp. You know, Malik Nabers might be, you know, top three receiver in football. Just guys seem really excited and want to rally around one another.
So let's just cut to the chase, because I know, you know, it's we could go a long time here, and we'd definitely love to have you back on. At the end of this season, what are you happy with going forward? What to you is now? Let's take away injuries and stats and different things. How many wins? Let's just go from there. Six, seven. You know what do they have to show besides being competitive in these games? What's a solid number?
That was going to be my answer to start. I want the Giants to be playing competitive football when the calendar turns to December. Like, they're on primetime national television December 1st against New England. Like, I want the Giants to be playing for something in that game with five games to go. You know, I don't want the Giants to be 2-10 going into Foxborough. So, I mean, listen, I think this team is really capable of being in a lot of football games. So I'm going to go with, I think they can honestly reach the 8-9 win threshold. You know, I think they're playing Washington at a really good time week one. They competed with them early in the season last year. I think there's a lot of things going wrong in Dallas. Just so much drama. How is Dak? Yeah. Parsons is laying on training tables. Like, what is going on there? So, unless he's a Penn Stater like me, Parsons, I don't know what's going on with him. So, listen, I think they could be competitive just one game at a time. And, it's a funky sport. Nobody had the Commanders being 60 minutes away from going to the Super Bowl last year. So one game at a time, I'm going to go with 8 or 9 wins.
That's good. Well, again, we appreciate you coming on, giving us a couple of minutes to talk about the Giants. And hopefully, we have some positive things to talk about the next time you're on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Come on anytime.
All right, that's A.J. Rovner with our Giants report. As the Giants look to start their season off after a 3-0 preseason with some positive notes. And,
absolutely.
Mike, with just another day in New York as we change sports one more time.
That's it. And, I get really juiced up this time of year because I'm a big tennis fan, as are you. And we're very happy right now. And proud to be joined by Irina Falcone Hartman, who is a former top 50 player in the United States and also is right now commentating for the U.S. Open. And once again, Irina, welcome to the program. Mike and Chris here on Long Island.
Hi, Mike and Chris. Great to speak with you guys. Happy to be here.
Well, it's been a big day for you. Day one, a lot going on. A Sunday start for the Open. I'm sure they have you running all around. How's it been, starting off here on a Sunday of the U.S. Open?
Well, first time ever starting on a Sunday, but to be honest, you guys, all the production team has been here for probably a few weeks now. They had the mixed doubles, the revamped, reimagined mixed doubles tournament last week, and so there's been a lot of work that has been going on at the U.S. Open, just absolutely crazy amount of people coming in to watch during fan week. So today was hectic, but there's been a lot of tennis already that's been played.
So you literally just opened up with one of our questions that we wanted to ask you, which was that reimagined mixed doubles tournament. Obviously, Chris is going to ask you in just a second because he was there and went around, and the fan, opening it to the fans in that first week was tremendous. I know. As a former touring pro, how did you feel about that setup, and is it something that you think was good, or did it really kind of maybe put a kind of a sour taste in some of the players because who are double specialists and who enjoy playing in a Grand Slam? What were your thoughts on that?
I saw both sides of it, Mike and Chris. I think that to fans, it was a lot of great energy. Everybody was buzzing. The atmosphere was electric. You got to see some big names. It was a very fast format. And so from that aspect, I understand that if you're trying to appeal to fans, that's the kind of energy you want. Those are the kind of matches that you want to see, and those are the players you want to watch, and I totally understand that. If I'm a player that's outside the, that's top 10 in the world in doubles and wasn't able to play, I probably have a sour taste in my mouth because I'm competing now. Instead of being able to play at two events at a slam, I'm now reduced to one if you are a double specialist. So I see both sides to it. So I think that the players that did play, they were very pleased with the paychecks the entire time. But Chris, you mentioned that you were there. I mean, you have to admit the energy was crazy.
Yeah, it was a great week. I was able to bring some kids. I was able to see some qualifying matches on the outside courts. you know, which is usually there. But I thought it was nice to be able to come in, not really pay anything, but be able to walk around, go to, you know, Arthur Ashe Court, see maybe the grandstand, and, you know, just gave a different feel. And I, you know, I just thought it was nice to be able to have that open and just have people walk around, because not everybody can pay for a grounds pass or go see Arthur Ashe on a specific day. So I'm sure for you guys that are there and you're working, it's nice to see some people walking around during the week.
Oh, absolutely. I think it just gives you, you know, much more of that U.S. Open vibe. But I think, especially for the younger generation, like you said, these passes, these tickets are quite expensive, but you are getting so much tennis in one day, which I totally understand. But if you're a young fan, to be able to walk around, get to see some great players, just practice.
Right.
I think that there's so much value in that.
So you literally just, I hate to use a tennis term, but you lobbed one up for me right here, Arena. So I've followed you for a long time, and so I'm going to take you back real quick. 2014, I bring my 10-year-old daughter to Arthur Ashe Kids Day, and you're talking about young kids and going, and she just has a ball. Now, I coach high school tennis. I coach a little college tennis, and she's just kind of getting into the game. So we go to Arthur Ashe, and we see the bands and all that stuff. And I said, "Hey, let's go watch some practice." And she said, "Okay." So we bought one of those big, huge, you know, pink tennis balls, and we go down, and you are practicing, and you were so sweet. You came over, you signed her ball, you talked to her for a few minutes, and it just, you know, that to me was so special. So number one, I want to thank you for that, but also it really just speaks to exactly what you were saying. To grow the game, that's what you want. And you know, again, thank you for being that person for us, and you are still in our household our favorite all-time tennis player.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, that just fills my heart, because that's one of the things I speak about with so many players and so many people, that it's the connections that you make on the tour. You know, you talk a lot about the wins and the losses, but it's who you're inspiring. It's who you have, that you're able to really make an impact with. And so there's been plenty of times where I have other youngsters have come up to me and said, "I remember when, you know, you talked to me then, or you signed my ball, or you took a picture with me." You just
Absolutely.
Never know who you can inspire. You never know what kind of impact you're making. And so I love that story, of course. Absolutely. I would do it. I would do it again in a heartbeat. And I'm just glad I was able to have the tiniest bit of impact.
Well, you had a huge impact, and it was a long time ago. And believe me, you know, that's one of the reasons why we still follow you. And while I have you on the phone here, before we kind of get to some of the nuts and bolts with the tournament, just real quick, I know you have a daughter, and you recently gave birth to twins. Congratulations on that. Number one, are you getting
Thank
any
you.
Sleep? And number two, is your daughter thinking about tennis?
Thank you. I am. It's a busy household right now.
Yes,
they
sure.
are 16 months old, and my daughter is three months shy from being four. So what we have really honed into is playing balloon tennis. So she'll just grab a racket. You know, she's got the little one that they give out, mm-hmm. that USTA gives out during the Net Generation clinics and stuff. So she's got the tiny racket, and we're just going after it with a balloon. So I just blow it up just
Fantastic.
Like halfway, and so it gets her hand-eye coordination going, and it's not as difficult as with a proper ball. So that's how we're starting. So I guess we're already kind of getting her into it. But my husband also, he's a professional
He's
boxer.
A boxer, right, yeah.
So he's got a private boxing gym. And so
oh boy.
She can throw down. She can throw
well,
down.
With two boys, she better. Right?
There's not been one day where she has missed going out in the gym
wow.
and, you know, going out there. And she can probably plank better than me. So she is... we're already training her to be an elite athlete, so
nice.
Starting her young.
Well, on your Instagram,
and,
she's a piece of work. She's fun.
Yeah, she's fun. And then the boys just recently started hitting the gym up as well. I've got one of them that is constantly trying to balance himself on the ropes. So, you know, we're just breeding some elite athletes here.
Great stuff.
So we're talking with Arena Falcone Hartman. One of the things we just wanted to hear from your perspective is there's a lot of women, especially American women, who have made their way into the main draw. Is this a year where possibly they could make it to the finals, maybe a Jessica Pegula, maybe, you know, somebody on the outside? Is this going to be a year where somebody can step up, or are we still in the mindset of there's a couple of top players and they're not American?
That's a great question. I think that the stars have to be aligned for anyone to win a slam. You think of someone like Aryna Sabalenka, who's been to so many finals and hasn't been able to win a few of them. Obviously, she's won quite a few already, but I just think that it could be anybody's game. If you're feeling good, I mean, you talked about Emma Raducanu a few years ago, so there just has to be a lot that has to go down for you to be able to come out and win seven matches in 2 weeks' time, and so... Could it be the year for an American? There's been an American in the final in the last four slams, right, at least, if I remember correctly. You have Anna Samova, you have Coco Gauff, you have Madison Keys, and then you had Pegula
right
in last year's U.S. Open. So could there be an American? I would bet my butt off, yes, there could definitely be an American in the final. And, you know, there's 48 American, both men and women, singles draws. So those numbers are just absolutely staggering. So
yeah,
our chances are great. Our chances are great. So it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Obviously, Madison Keys had a resurgence earlier with the Australian Open. You have Coco Gauff, who's just started working with a biomechanics specialist who's been taking care of her serve. So there's just a lot of great tennis players out there. I saw Katie McNally played one of the cleanest matches I've ever seen her play today against Jill Teichman. There's just a lot of talent. There's a lot of good tennis players out there, and a lot of them happen to be American.
Yeah, and you mentioned Coco Gauff. What do you make of her kind of making a little bit of a change in the coaching right before this tournament? And it seems like she's kind of been bouncing back and forth. You know, her game has been a little up and down throughout the summer. Just an interesting thing, though, to do so, you know, quickly right before a tournament and a slam.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you see Coco Gauff, you think, oh, my gosh, you know, she had a not the greatest summer, but she did win the French Open. You have to
yeah,
remember
I know. That's,
that. And
yeah.
I understand
anybody
that it's what have
that.
You done for me lately, but it's one of those things where you have to remember that she did just win the French Open earlier this year, and she's just one of those players that she's going to make you work for it. So is it surprising that she got a specialist 2 days before the slam was starting? Yes and no. I think that's what makes her so good. One of my favorite quotes that she said this tournament was, "I'm obsessed with getting better."
Mm.
And so with that kind of mentality, that kind of mindset, that's a champion's mentality. How can I get better today? And I think that that's what Beth Shelton also said today as well after his match, very clinical against Ignacio Busse, and he won in straight sets and just played phenomenal tennis. But what's the first thing? He's like, you know, I know that there are things that I can clean up. I'm trying to focus on how I can get better. And so I think that that's what makes the good to the great.
Right.
When we look at the men's side, if I gave you $100 to put down on either the field or Alcaraz, Sinner, Djokovic, where would you put your money?
It would be either Sinner or Alcaraz.
So you'll take one of those three.
I don't really know if Djokovic is the same Djokovic that we knew
right
a few years ago. So I think that these two guys are playing some good tennis, but then I also love Ben Shelton playing, you know, playing at that level. I mean, the only people that he's lost to ended up winning the tournament in the last four slams. So it's tough. Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz are really just setting the benchmark. I mean, if you can beat those guys, good on you. But I mean, those are the guys to beat.
Yeah, hard to bet against them, and you know I'd love to see Ben Shelton break through, and he seems like he's right on the precipice of doing it. You know, along with that, so you know you played in the Open, you played Venus on center on Ash Court in 2015, and you know three setter. You You're there every day. What is it about the U.S. Open that just makes it so difficult? We know the Slams, it's 2 weeks. Is it the weather? Is it the just the pull of New York City? Is it all of that that makes it such a difficult tournament to win?
I think the biggest thing that I would say is it's going to sound fairly silly, but it's the commute.
Hmm.
It's the commute from the city that is just so it's a lot. The New York City as a whole can be very, very energy consuming, if that makes sense. And so having to plan, okay, I have to, you know, give time for traffic, and I have to, in case there's an accident, there's just so much of that. And so my biggest advice to anybody listening, just stay in Flushing. Just don't put yourself through that headache. And just, you're here for work. You're not really here to go to the latest restaurant. You're not here to go out. You're here to play tennis.
Right.
And so I think that's my biggest thing. I think that there's a lot of things to be that need to happen to win a slam. But my biggest, the thing that I've noticed the most is
the
top players stay in their bubble.
Yeah.
They stay in their bubble. They try and just have the least amount of distractions. Yeah. They try and just stay within themselves, within their team. You know, I remember watching the Netflix documentary, and Iga Świątek was building Legos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love to see that. I was like, you know, she's doing what makes her comfortable. She's doing what's potentially helping her brain work better. I really can't answer to that. But I think that just not letting the buzz around New York City, you have to let it help you instead of drain you, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, just real quickly, I wanted to ask, you know, obviously you're doing a lot of commentating, and you've gotten into a little bit of coaching. What's your future look like with tennis? Is this kind of a permanent thing for you? Are you thinking with the commentating part? Are you looking to get back in maybe from a coaching standpoint? I you know, you mentioned that you have three little ones. What is on your agenda here tennis-wise?
That's a great question. I think from a commentating standpoint, I'd love to get more and more into it. Obviously, I take care of three little ones, like you said. So right now, they're my main priority. But I definitely love just talking about the game, talking about players. How can this player get better? I love to talk about technique and game plans and strategy. Those are the kind of things that I love to really chatter about. And so in terms of commentating, yes, I want to do more of it. I'm actually in the process of reaching out to a few people in that business to get more gigs. And so I just think it's a wonderful, it's a great pathway, especially if you love the game and you love being there. Because I know that there are some players that can just say, hey, I don't want to go to a slam. Like, I can't stand seeing other players compete, and I'm not competing. For me, I'm just like, hey, I haven't lost a point from the booth. So I am just having a great time up here. The AC is on me. I'm having a wonderful time. So you guys keep doing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Irina Falcone-Hartman, again, thank you so much for joining us tonight and for your insights. Enjoy the tournament. And again, for my family, thank you for being so kind to us back in the day. And we wish you all the best. And hopefully you get a little sleep after this tournament's over, but keep those kids in the gym.
I appreciate it, Mike and Chris. You guys have a great one. Thanks
all right.
for having me.
Enjoy the tournament.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Our pleasure. That was Irina Falcone-Hartman who joined us. Great stuff. I could have talked to her for an hour.
Yeah.
But we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to have Mark Gottfried, former NCAA basketball coach, join us here on Sports Talk New York.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the second half hour of WGBB Sports Talk New York. 516-623-1240 is the number if you'd like to join in with us. Again, 516-623-1240. We're just waiting on Coach Mark Gottfried, who is the head of the Get It Done approach, or as he calls it, the GID approach. We'll be speaking with him hopefully in a couple of minutes. But Chris got some great insights there on the tennis. And like we had kind of said off air, we could have spoken a little while but about a lot of things. But I think Irina did a great job of coming across not really critical of the U.S. Open, but being fair about the fact that players, you know, in her realm when she was playing got kind of skunked by this whole, you know, mixed doubles thing.
Yeah, it's a tough thing where you're trying to promote the sport, get people out there, and maybe even get some singles players to open up in the doubles. And at the same time, some other people are just upset at the way the format goes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's never going to be everyone liking a decision that you make. Even starting on Sunday instead of starting on Monday, there's people that don't like that. There's people like, hey, listen, I should be... If I want to go play in the Cincinnati Open, and again, I don't even know when these things are, but you want to play in a tune-up tournament,
sure.
Right? If you're playing that all the way through till Friday or Saturday of the week before, and then you have to come here and possibly play Sunday or Monday, that's a major disadvantage.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago we had the Hamlet Cup.
The Hamlet, you'd be driving.
Yeah, which absolutely, which I worked out in Comac, and it was close. Now you're talking about the men came from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and the women came from Cleveland. So if you're playing that tournament, it's tough. You know, if you're here working for a week like most of the top players are, that's another thing. But just to kind of sum up, if you're not aware, what happened this year at the Open was rather than have a traditional mixed doubles tournament where you have one man and woman playing together over the course of the 2 weeks, what they decided this year was to do a two-day format during fan week, and, you know, a lot of the players that would normally play that were in other tournaments or weren't even asked to play. It was all about name recognition.
That's it.
They did these little four-game sets, and, you know, as a traditionalist, it just drove me nuts.
Yeah.
And I get what they're talking about, trying to get people, you know, in, and I think Irina hit it perfectly. You want to get kids interested in the game and whatever else, and there was a big buzz. But go watch practice, and you know, you could have done a lot of other things during that time. So it's kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, I guess.
Yeah, and again, you have the opportunity to see that stuff, but then you see things like, you know, Venus Williams getting an exemption and coming back and playing again. I mean, do you really want to see people pulling Jimmy Connors and coming back at 40 something years old?
Well,
to take a spot away from, again, yeah. I am more of a let's watch something 21-year-old hot college kid who worked their way into a qualifier,
right.
Win three qualifying matches, and then get a chance to play the number 5 seed. I'd love to see that.
Exactly.
Then see somebody come in and play a weaker opponent, make their way into the second and third rounds.
Yeah, that one drew a lot of backlash. And also, I mean, Andy Roddick, who's kind of tough on a lot of those things, thought it was great that Venus Williams was given a wild card at 45 years of age, not having played in years. You know, she played a couple of minor tournaments. I'm right there with it. You know, I love Venus. God bless her. She's an all-time great. It's not like she's been playing for 6 months, and it was like, hey, let's... It was just a nostalgia play. And, I don't know. The U.S. Open, it's so... And how do I say this without sounding... I don't know, just anti-American.
You gotta
it's
say
so American.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get as many people in and get the cash grab and get Venus back on. And you don't need that, guys. You don't need that.
It's tough.
Oh.
And I think that puts people in a bad situation, and, you know, it becomes a tough spot. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think people are just going to be excited about the U.S. Open this year just because of the way it's starting.
Yeah.
And I think it might give people a chance to possibly see a match that they normally wouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because there's so many Americans, you're going to have American versus American in the first round. I think you're going to go into maybe day 4, day 5, day 6 and still have a few Americans left to watch.
Absolutely. My last point before we move on is with the U.S. Open, you know, here's a tournament that when I was a kid, it was so small, I used to sneak in through the kitchen to get in, and there was no security. You know, this is the early 80s, and this was the John McEnroe, Jimmy Connors era. I mean, tennis was big, but it was just so different. Now, the U.S. Open is a moneymaker, which is great because it helps the, you know, grow the game. But just in itself, it's one of the top sporting events in the country throughout the year, and it's going to have some hiccups. It's going to have some things that they're going to try and go back and forth. So as you mentioned, Chris, you can't fault them on trying something new. I would assume that they'll probably stay with that. But as we kind of round into September here, nothing better than, you know, you watch a little baseball on the TV, but 7, 8 o'clock at night, you see that great skyline shot from ESPN and used to be USA Network of the sun going down and tennis is going on. And now you have a roof on two courts, so you guarantee these night matches. You know, so kudos to the USTA for a lot of what they've done to make this just a global event as well as, you know, just a great sporting event. You know, while we're waiting, hopefully, for Mark Godfrey to join us, I think it would be remiss of us if we didn't segue into a little Mets talk. You know, again, they are the roller coaster of roller coasters. There's one thing that I saw today, and I want to make sure that I get this correct, because it's easy to throw out numbers and things like that. But the Mets this year are now 0-53.
Yep.
When trailing after eight innings.
Yep.
0-53. Now,
that's a deck of cards plus a joker.
There you go. So there's a lot of jokers, I think, are running around. It's easy to say there's no heart. There's no, you know,
there's no grit.
Yeah, you know, to not come back in the ninth inning 53 times, I mean, it's just last year, you know, it was funny, but you had the OMG, the oh my God, and the grimace and all that stuff. But there was a spark. There was a fire. There was that, and it is just missing. But there's a lot of the same guys left on that team. Now, easy to say, oh, it's the Juan Soto effect, and I'm not going to just say that. Let's take him off the board. What is wrong with this club, Cap, that they can't come back?
Well, it's a good segue, you know, into where they're at. As I said, we are still waiting on Mark Godfrey. Not sure if he's going to be calling in at some point. But in the meantime, you know, the Mets are 28-37 away from home. It just seems like they go on the road and it just ends. And there's just a situation where they're ready to so-called quit. Now, we know what the biggest problem with this team is. And that is when you're starting pitching, cannot go seven innings, you're putting a big damper on your bullpen. And if your bullpen is being taxed so much, eventually it's going to cause issues. But in today's situation, you know, you had a starter go pretty deep. But I think at some point, we trust David Peterson more than the other starters because he's gotten us there. But all of the signs today, and I'm talking about one specific day, was David Peterson was done. He was walking guys, not making pitches anywhere near the plate. And next thing you know, another base hit and the game is tied. But I just think there are so many fallacies with this team where they win two games and people start getting excited, but they don't care. They really don't care about what's going on the field. I think it's, hey, if I get a base hit, that's fine. If I swing for the fences and miss. But there are so many holes in this offense. Where are the Mets being saved? They're being saved by young kids. By Mark Vientos, by Nolan McLean, by, you know, a random spot starter, you know, reliever out of the pen. They're being saved by the guys who are not making the money. And somebody on this team who's a big shot has to step up in the final 35 games or so in order for this team to even make the playoffs. Let's stop showing what the Phillies score is against the Nationals. How about we focus on what the Mets are doing on the field? In order for them to make the playoffs, they have to win more games than the Cincinnati Reds the rest of the year. That is it. Bottom line. Move over to the Yankees. Same thing. Stop looking at everybody else. Find a way to win a game because you have enough pitching and you have enough hitting. The Yankees, on the other hand, Mike, are one of the worst fielding teams that I have seen in like 20 years.
It's frightening. It's frightening how bad they are. And these are Major League Baseball players.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not spring. And I can't imagine they're that tight. You know, Aaron Boone apparently. I mean, the word is he's a player's manager, right? He's got the
packs. Yeah, I understand that.
I don't know, but I mean, again, yeah, they are frightening with the mistakes that they make. They just seem to. I don't know. Both teams are struggling. They're both are up and down. I don't know. What do you think the chances are that both of these teams make? You know, the rest of the league is so poor with four wild cards. Do you think both teams are going to make it?
I think with the wild card situation, there's a good chance that both teams do make it. But I think the Mets are really struggling to stay above that line. The Yankees have a little bit better of a chance because, you know, I think they just fell a little bit behind the Red Sox, which would put them in the second wild card because the Red Sox right now 71 wins, Yankees 69, Mariners at 70. So I guess the Yankees would be right around that third wild card. After that, the next team is, you know, 67. So I think I would say the Mets and the Yankees are both on that same situation where they're both a game and a half in front for that last wild card where one bad week and you could be looking at both teams are out. So I would say if you ask me what's the chances of both teams making the playoffs at the end of the year, I'd probably put it somewhere in that 30 to 40% chance.
When we had Mickey Callaway on 2 weeks ago, he was talking a lot about Terry Francona, or as everybody calls him, Tito, and he is the manager of the Cincinnati Reds. He just seems to be the perfect guy to come in and get teams like to the next level, over the hump. And slowly but surely, the Reds have been lurking in the background, and here they are right on the tail of the Mets, you know, with little fanfare. And I think that's one of the most important facts that we can say is that outside of New York, you know, L.A., Boston, those markets, but if you're a quote-unquote smaller market, now Cincinnati Reds have been one of the oldest teams, you know, in the game of baseball, but they're allowed to just kind of creep along, and boom, there they are. And when I here we are 2 weeks ago talking about that and Francona, and I kind of chuckled when Mickey spoke about him and how wonderful he is, but boy, he has that team playing well, and there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, and you know, at some point, teams are going to run out of pitching and run out of magic, you know, and it's just a matter of who gets hot. And honestly, it's always the team at the end. Think about the Mets, how they finished the season. They had to win a bunch of games. Now, did they falter in Milwaukee in the so-called next-to-last series of the season? Yeah, they had to go back to Atlanta, play some hurricane games, and win those in order to get in. But, you know, it's whoever is playing hot at the end of the season. You know, you could be that team that wins your division by 11 games, but if you got nothing left in the tank, you have to sit out for 3-4 days and then try and play a team that's hot. And as we've seen, Mike, it's not the team that has 116 wins.
No.
It's the team who's ready to go. But let's be honest. Mets, Yankees, let's say either one, both makes the playoffs. What pitcher in a three-game series are you counting on out of either of those teams to do almost lights-out damage?
Lights out damage.
That, like a guy's going to go on a mound and give you 6 to 7 innings of less than 2 runs. Because you can't go 4 innings in all 3 games.
No.
You got to have one guy give you depth.
And I thought that would be really consistently David Peterson. And he kind of, like, again, not lights out, but that depth. But he seems
to falters.
Not,
he loses his.
I thought he was going to make a huge step.
Yeah. He's still pretty good, but. Honestly, right now, Nolan McClain's that guy.
Yeah.
He is that guy.
two starts into his major league career.
No runs. The next guy up is not going to be Sprout.
No. He got...
Well, they put him out of the pen today.
Yeah, he got knocked around a little bit. But
it's going to be Tong. Jonah Tong's going to come up here.
You think so?
I am telling you, he's going to come up here in the next 2 weeks, and somebody's going to be really excited.
I hope so.
He's nasty.
Oh, and everything you hear about him, he just dominates every level.
And here's the thing. I don't want to call it desperation. I want to call it he's the best man for the job at this point. Desperation is, hey, we're 4 games behind and we need anything we can get. They're in the driver's seat right now. They just don't have anybody to drive them. Right. And I think he would be that guy. And honestly, whether he pitches out of the bullpen or starts 4 games for us the rest of the year, 8 games for us the rest of the year, whatever that is, that's great. I mean, here's another thing. We have Kodai Senga pitching on 4 days rest for the first time this year. You know, that's desperation.
Yes, that is. And I was going to bring that up you read my mind. You know, the obvious answer is yes, that he hasn't been right since he injured himself, you know, a couple months back. And that you can really kind of trace a lot of the Mets' downfall to that day. They were rolling, and then he got hurt, and things happened. But he just does not seem like himself either. He's, you know, again, last year was a lost year. He threw a game in the playoffs. So to me, he seems like a gamer, and he's out there, and he's doing the best he can. But he's a different pitcher this year.
Yeah, he is not an ace, and I don't know if it's fatigue or if it's just he doesn't have his grip on the ball, but he never really started the year out healthy, and that goes with a lot of the Mets. They weren't healthy to start the year. Sean Manaea, I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Just never really had that. He doesn't have a feel right now. He's a bullpen guy. Clay Holmes, I think, should be a bullpen guy. Really, your starters right now should be Nolan McLean, Noah Tong, and David Peterson. Throw Kodai Senga in there as your fourth and whatever else you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, but you got to get yourself through the season. And that said, like the fact that you're taping everything together and trying to put some things together. So,
well, listen, here we are. It's August 24th.
Yep, we're still talking baseball.
Yes, and if the Mets do make the playoffs, which we're hoping they do, it's probably going to be one, if not two, players who haven't even pitched an inning for them yet this year,
yeah,
or pitched, you know, a maximum of two games, who they're going to be relying on. And
yep,
unless Showman, I think he can. Listen, I'm a big believer in him, but you need the innings, and I know he's basically still in extended spring training, so it's going to be tough to go. But you know, I was gonna bring up my least favorite three letters in the dictionary when you put them together.
Yes.
PCA.
Yeah.
From Chicago.
But
we'll,
it's tough.
We'll go. That's another
516-623-1240 if you want to call in. Obviously, maybe there was a time difference with Mark Gottfried. So we will talk baseball, U.S. Open. Also, anything you want to talk Giants, we'll take your questions. Call up 516-623-1240.
And we do have a caller right now. Brendan is calling in with a question with us. Good evening, Brendan. How you doing?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Fabulous.
All right, so here's my question.
Okay.
If you had to pick one dark horse for the U.S. Open, one on the men's, one on the women's, who do you have?
What is dark horse considered? A
non-ranked
player,
yeah,
or just somebody like a certain seed and below?
Let's just go outside of the top 10.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Her name was mentioned by Irina Falcone before. I like what I see out of Emma Raducanu. She's won the tournament before, playing pretty well. I think she's in love. I think there's a little romance there with Carlos. But I could see her. The other one who I think has been playing very well, this is a name that you'll know, Brendan, because you're in the tennis world, but Leila Fernandez. I think she's played really well. Now, to win the tournament, I don't know if those two can get there, but I think they can make some noise. So those are kind of my dark horses, but Raducanu especially, that's not a super bold pick. She's just outside of the top 36 there, but I could see that. What do you think, Cap?
On the women's side, I would say I'd like to see a run from Sophia Kennan, I believe, is an American girl, ranked a little bit lower. And, you know, back on the men's side, a guy that I'd like to get his way back up into the top would be Tsitsipas. I think this could be Stefano Tsitsipas, a chance for him to rise. An American and a guy, you know, I'd like to see is Francis Tiafoe. I don't know if he's going to last that long, but that would be an American that I'd like to see go pretty far. What about you?
Oh, good one. Let's see. Well, I'd like to see a nice run from Petra Kvitova. She's retiring at the end of this tournament, coming back after... Years ago, she was attacked by an intruder, and then she had a baby. It's been this whole thing. So I just want to see her win at least one round or two. Do I think she's going to win the whole thing? No. But I'm going to agree with Coach Mike. I'm going with Leila Fernandez. She's a lefty. She's creative. She knows what it means to make the finals here. So that could be it. And on the men's side, I know he's not outside the top 10, but not a lot of people a year ago were talking about Jack Draper. He hit the ball pretty hard. He got some mixed doubles in with Jeff Pegula. He's really talented, and he seems to have a pretty good attitude. But let's see. I could also go for there's a Brazilian. His name is Fonseca, and everybody's talking about him.
He's a young dude who can really hit the ball.
Oh, yeah. He's excellent, and he's got a good old court game. So those are my dark horse picks.
So, Brendan, I wanted to ask you about – here's a guy I'm going to bring up, Tommy Paul. He's seeded 14th, U.S. player. He's obviously very talented, does well at these things, but he's never mentioned as a guy, in the Ben Shelton, even Tiafoe, who's ranked lower than him right now. Does Tommy Paul have the game to win a Grand Slam, and could he do it in New York?
Does he have the game? Yes. Do I think he has the mentality? I think he's good for a quarterfinal run. There's just something about the pressure points, the big points, the break points. I don't see it yet, but if he puts it together, like, that's what's so great about the U.S. Open. You get the home court advantage. You get the American crowd on your side. And those key moments, sometimes the crowd pulls you through. So anything's possible with him, I think.
No, I agree. And these tournaments always, and I think you would admit this, that these Grand Slams, somebody always comes out of the weeds from the home country. And it wouldn't be a big, huge surprise for, someone from the U.S., but obviously because this is the U.S. Open. But when you look, there's just a bunch of names you have in the top seeds. A Brandon Nakashima, who's, it's 30th. Alex Mickelson, 28th. You get a bunch of guys, who you never really heard of, who could all of a sudden, they're in the quarters and everyone's like, wow, this is the next great American player. So, hopefully something like that happens. But, those players that you mentioned, I'm a big Leila Fernandez fan, as left-hander out of Canada, and I would like to see, someone like that. What were your thoughts on Venus getting the wild card into this tournament?
Well, I'm a big Venus fan. I think she's great for the sport. She's done so much for equal prize money. So from that aspect, like Irina was talking about earlier, you want fans to come. People are going to come for Venus. She's American. She's a favorite. She's won the tournament a couple of times. So from that aspect, and just because I think she's a good ambassador to the sport, yes. Do I think that somebody else who maybe has been playing a little bit more consistently could have had the spot? Absolutely. But how do you say no to, the future Hall of Famer?
Yeah, and I don't think one spot is really what gets, somebody irked off, because there's people that are lucky losers. You couldn't win three matches in a row in the qualifying, but you were one of the top 100 seeds, so we're gonna put you in. So it's not a big deal to grab that one spot. I think this year, honestly, and I get into it every year, the U.S. Open. I don't go all the time, but I think this year is gonna have a lot of flavor. I think people are gonna get into it. You got that extra day. People really love those night matches. You're going to have night matches in one stadium and another, and, you don't have to worry about the weather. I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a lot of fun. I think starting a day earlier lets things space things out. I find it very interesting. There seems to be this electricity, but also this kind of tug-of-war going on lately. Mixed doubles, a shortened format. Some of the top women players coming out saying, we don't want five sets anymore at the Grand Slam. So I'm curious to see what the Players Council will do, and trying to understand we need to make the sport exciting while also keeping with the tradition of the sport, not changing it too much.
Well, Brendan, thanks for calling in. 2 weeks from tonight, we'd love to have you back on to talk some finals. Thanks again for joining us. A.J. Rogner, who spoke about the Giants, had a good talk with him. Irina Falcone-Hartman, who joined us as well. And hopefully we'll get Mark
on. Reschedule, Mark.
From the West Coast. Cap, great job. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, and let's go Mets, and let's get some United States players in this U.S. Open win.
Enjoy the summer.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.